I'm going to just, I'm curious, does Titanic guy know who sang that song? Charles, you know who sang that?
Bon Jovi, I think.
Woohoo!
Very good. See,
he's on it.
Chaz and AJ in the morning, 99.1 PLR, 95.9 The Fox. Charles House is president and founder of Titanic International Society.
Yeah.
International.
Indeed so.
Good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
Good. The last time we had you on, we just didn't have enough time to cover everything. We started with the ship and then went into your dive. Let's start with the dive and then we'll go into the ship. So you guys are going?
I'm sorry, say that again.
So when is this this dive going to take place?
Well, it was tentatively scheduled to take place in August, but there have been two complications. The first is the pandemic, which may very well postpone it until next summer. Oh, yeah. And then also there is a challenge of the judge's ruling by the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration. And that they
What's
are
their
asking,
problem?
Well, they seem to think that, they seem to think that they have jurisdiction over the wreck because of a treaty that was recently signed between the UK and the US, and also because of a law that was slipped into an appropriations bill by Congress back in 2017. And they believe that this gives them the power to regulate the Titanic wreck, among others. And the question, of course, is whether NOAA's sphere of influence or jurisdiction actually extends to a wreck out in the middle of the ocean. And there's a big question mark about that.
Yeah, boy.
So what you have is a conflict between what might be called terrestrial law and admiralty law, which is the basis on which Judge Smith has been supervising Titanic's case. So admiralty law is the law of the high seas. It would, for example, handle a case where a Brazilian freighter crashed into a Canadian ship, the international law of the sea. And RMS Titanic Incorporated is arguing that it is admiralty law, as specified in the U.S. Constitution, that is in charge here.
And you're just trying to go down and get the Marconi telegraph machine?
That's the hope, yes. There are some photographs showing that the roof over the wireless cabin is severely deteriorating. The steel in the upper parts of Titanic is only about a quarter of an inch thick. And it's begun to perforate in this area, and the concern is that if action is not taken quickly, any opportunity of recovering the radio would be made impossible.
What will you get by getting the radio?
Yeah, what's left?
There are no surviving examples of that particular model radio. So
really?
That's correct.
Wow, so the only one known to man is in the Titanic
way
at the bottom
there.
Of the ocean.
Yeah, not too hard to get.
Right, and basically in an area of great deterioration. They know, for example, that already some of the component pieces of this are literally dangling by their wires because the wall on which they were mounted has deteriorated and disappeared. So the time is limited.
What's the so we get this, right? You go down and it's a whole process, right? You have to cut through this and with a robot and go down and grab it and then successfully pull it up and hopefully it doesn't crumble on the way up. So let's say you get it, right? You bring it up and then what do you do with it? Museum?
Restore?
Well, it has to be conserved first. And I know from being on several expeditions that when an artifact comes up out of the ocean, the first thing you've got to do is immediately put it in a salt water bath because exposure to air can literally destroy it very quickly. It then goes to a conservation laboratory, and it might very well take several years to desalinate the various pieces. They all absorb salt water. And once that's done, then you have the question of how far back do you want to bring it. There's a difference between conservation and restoration. Restoration would be an attempt to bring it back to the way it was in 1912. Whether that's possible, I don't know.
It sounds impossible.
Well, that's been done just a couple of things from the Titanic, wasn't it? It wasn't like the ship's, like, the speed, full-speed throttle thing, like, taken up once?
You mean the engine room telegraph?
Yeah, well, the engine room, the throttle thing they have.
Right. I remember very clearly seeing the engine room telegraph, which was the device used from the bridge to let the engine room know, you know, the speed that was desired. And when I saw it, it was half buried in the sand. The head of the telegraph, it stood about 5 feet high, was separated from the column, the pedestal on which it sat, and it had to be recovered basically in two pieces and then restored at the conservation
lab. It's unreal. I look at these pictures of the Titanic at the bottom of the ocean.
Yeah.
And I can't even tell what I'm looking at.
I
can see the ship, some things. But then there's like a little arrow, and that's what this is. How do these people figure this out? I can't wait to hear this answer. Charles Haas, president and founder of Titanic International Society, on. If there was one thing you could get off that ship, what would it be?
I think I would like to find the ship's log. I say that because it would contain a lot of information in terms of the ship's course, the ship's speed orders, the navigation of the ship. I think it would be very, very interesting to see how the voyage unfolded literally minute by minute as the ship crossed the Atlantic. Another object which I would love to see is a...
I knew there wasn't going to be one.
No.
Because you founded the Titanic International Society. Yeah. There's no way there's one.
There's lots of stuff.
Yeah. No, and, Titanic is, in a way, kind of like an underwater city, and every city has all kinds of treasures, and the ship is no exception. The other thing I'd like to see is a bound copy of The Rubaiyat by Omar Khayyam. This was a book of Persian love poems, but it was a very special book because it was bound in leather, and the cover of it was embedded with dozens and dozens of precious and semi-precious stones. There are photographs of it. The design on the cover was a peacock, and all of the peacock feathers were done with these stones. The big question, of course, is where is it? Because we have the cargo stowage plan of the ship, and it does not show up there. So we're thinking that it was probably in a passenger's stateroom, and that's probably where the remains of it are now. Some people might say, well, you know, it's a book. It probably didn't survive very well.
Right. I mean, it's made of paper, so is there any chance that those things still exist?
Absolutely. Believe it or not, we have actually found newspapers inside suitcases of passengers.
Wow.
Which, with a little bit of conservation, are absolutely readable.
That's incredible.
And leather.
That is incredible.
Leather, believe it or not, because of the tannic acid used to tan the leather, is protected against fish gnawing on it. So there would be a fairly good chance. And you know, remember, too, that it would be wrapped in some sort of a protective covering. There would be a pretty good chance that it might still exist. But
wow.
The question is where.
Oh, my God.
Was there really a car on that boat?
The one that Jack that Jack and Rose made out in. Was there a car on the boat?
There was a 1912 Renault automobile. It was owned by a fellow named William Carter. Unlike the gigantic car that was used in Cameron's movie, this was more like a sports runabout. And Jack and Rose, when they had their romantic interlude, I think they would have had a lot of trouble with the gearshift right in the middle of it.
In a Renault, never happens. Yeah.
What of all the things retrieved from the Titanic, what do you think would be like in the top three great finds?
Well, that's a tough one. I think one of the things would be a piece of floor tile from the first-class dining saloon. For years, it had been thought that the dining saloon was actually carpeted, and what we found was that in reality it was a series of inlaid rubber pieces that formed a very intricate design. So that was significant from the standpoint.
See, I would think that you guys would know that just from the shipbuilder.
Yeah.
Well, believe it or not, the description of Titanic in the contemporary magazines is really very vague because most of the verbiage was expended on the Titanic's older sister ship, the Olympic. And as a result of that, Titanic really had relatively little by way of information other than the fact that, you know, it was the second of the so-called Olympic class. So there really wasn't a lot of information about color schemes and things like that. And the Olympic, having gone to the scrapyard in the 1930s, before color photography was widespread, there just wasn't a lot of information. So that, the floor tile was, I think, one very interesting and significant piece. I think another thing that, at least from an emotional value, was a couple of marbles that were owned by a child. And that, of course, causes us to think about the children on board who, unfortunately, in many cases, did not survive. You have the invocation of the women and children first rule, and that would seem to help with the survival rate, excuse me, of the kids. But what happens is you have entire families staying behind because the father couldn't join them. And so you have entire families being wiped out.
Wow.
And, so it was actually a counterproductive in terms of what the results were. I think also another thing that is very emotive, they found a person's eyeglasses. Now, I wear glasses every day, and I'm lost without them. And, you know, that brought to mind a conversation that I had with Eva Hart, the Titanic survivor, who had been very much opposed to artifact retrieval because she viewed the Titanic as her father's grave. But in speaking with her, and this was maybe, oh, gosh, probably about 6 months before she passed away, I forget how the conversation came around to it, but we talked about artifacts, and I said to Eva, you know, Eva, there is going to come a time when there are no survivors left to talk about your father and all the other people on board, and the artifacts are the means by which the human beings on that ship are going to, their memory is going to be kept alive through those pieces. And I could see that she was struggling with that. And then she said very quietly, you know, Charles, you're right. The artifacts have to speak for us. And so she had done basically a 180-degree turn, realizing that her time on Earth was coming to an end.
Wow. That's an impactful moment. Charles House, president and founder of Titanic International Society, on the phone. And all of this will be up on the radio station website as audio on demand today. Charles, any conspiracy theories floating around the Titanic? You know, we can't have a major tragedy or event without conspiracy theories.
That, if you'll pardon the pun, surfaced several years ago that said that the ship on the bottom of the ocean was not the Titanic after all. It was the sister ship Olympic. And it was a giant insurance scam, and the perpetrators of that myth apparently didn't realize that the two ships were not perfectly identical, and it's very easy to tell them apart. So that conspiracy died a very quick death, even though the book that they wrote, you know, was a bestseller and so forth. So,
wow.
There is also an ongoing debate about the role of a British freighter called the Californian. Depending on whom you listen to, the Californian was within 5 miles of the Titanic, saw the ship sinking, and failed to go to the ship's aid. On the other hand, recent data suggests that the two ships were something like 19 miles apart, and because of the curvature of the Earth, it would not have been possible for the one ship to see the other, although it may have been possible that the Californian might have seen Titanic's distress rockets at the very top of their arc. And, you know, that debate is ongoing. I just had a friend of mine who's been very actively involved in trying to clear the Californian propose an idea about using the stars, the planets, to explain what was being seen from the Titanic. They noticed a red object low on the horizon and thought it might be another ship, but he's discovered that the planet Mars was actually low on the horizon that night, so maybe that's what explained what they were seeing. So, yeah, there are conspiracy theories. You know, another theory said that if the Titanic's watertight doors had not been closed, the water would have run through the entire length of the ship, and the ship would not have sunk as quickly as it did. But on the other hand, when you have water rushing through a ship and it's not contained in any way, you get something called a free surface effect, which means that the water starts sloshing around, and eventually the ship loses stability and would probably capsize. So, yeah, lots of theories out there. Very few of them hold up once you start doing the digging.
What about the captain? Has anyone found the remains of the captain? And did he commit suicide? Did he go down? What do we know about the captain?
Well, Ever J. Smith was White Star's senior captain. He had actually announced plans to retire. There were people who literally timed their transatlantic voyages to be on one of his ships.
Wow.
So this was they actually asked him to make one more crossing, you know, because he did have that following. And it was kind of like a valedictory crossing for him. But there are two theories about Captain Smith. There was a fireman or a stoker who said that the captain approached a lifeboat with a child in his arms, left the child with the lifeboat, and then said, "I will now follow my ship," or words to that effect. There's also indication that when the Titanic's bridge was submerged, Smith was still on the bridge. Excuse me. The forward funnel could not stand the strain of being at such a tilted angle, and as it fell forward, it crushed the forward part of the ship, including the bridge. So perhaps that's how he met his end, on the bridge, giving instructions or being in control of things. In subsequent court proceedings, it was found that he had navigated the ship at excessive speed, given the warnings that he had received. But the two official investigations found that he was following the practice of every other captain, and that was to go at full speed until such time as an obstruction was spotted, and then expect your lookouts to tell you that there is the obstruction and take evasive action. And obviously, Titanic proved that practice was not really a very good one.
Yeah, I thought about that this weekend.
Yeah.
When you said if they didn't do anything, they would have been fine. It was the turning to try to avoid it that opened up the side.
That's... Yes. Yeah. A head-on collision would have actually prevented the ship from sinking, because a relatively low number of watertight compartments would flood.
I was thinking about that while I was in my pool floating on a margarita float.
There you go.
The beer in my hand.
Right, same thing.
Same thing. It popped into my head, exactly, but it did.
Right.
So, no icebergs in sight, however.
No, no, just ice in the beer.
Ice cubes, yeah. Yeah.
We got to get you back because, you know, we're just scratching the surface here.
Literally.
Thank you for coming on, and we'll talk to you real soon.
I've enjoyed it, guys, and I hope we can do it again.
Oh, absolutely.
Cool.
Yeah.
Yep.
Get ready for a call.
Okay, that's all right. The deal.
Thank you. Charles Haas, president and founder of Titanic International Society.
I feel like I just have so much to talk to him about.
Right. Well, he knows everything. So if you mention one thing, you get a history lesson on that.
Yeah.
Holy smokes.